Sensory-assisted strawberry breeding, Vance.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you. Since I'm following the citrus talk, I should note that Dr. Gemitter gave me a sugar bell, which I have in my yard, and it's great. It's really good. Today, before I begin, I want to acknowledge my co-authors and collaborators, Ann Plato, who's involved in trained sensory panels, as well as volatile analysis and other traits, Charlie Sims and Linda Bartoschuk, who have been involved in consumer panels and scaling, Alan Chambers, who's a former graduate student, co-advised by Kevin Folta and myself, and also Dave Clark, Mike Schwederman, and Thomas Calhoun, who are in the Environmental Horticulture Department and who have done quite a bit of work on the chemical side of the flavor question. So the strawberry industry in Florida is concentrated in about 11,000 acres around Plant City. University of Florida varieties are grown widely in this area. I've shown three of our cultivars that are the main cultivars in the last season. We have always focused on flavor in the breeding program, Dr. Chandler, my predecessor, as well as myself. But we're finding that among Florida strawberry growers, even, and marketers, flavor is becoming more important to them, which I believe is largely driven by the fact that they're experiencing more competition from Central Mexico and see the need to differentiate their product in the marketplace. So we're trying to respond to these needs in the breeding program by focusing on flavor. Florida is a great place to breed for flavor because I believe it's a very challenging place to breed for strawberry flavor. We have two main seasonal peaks that occur typically in December and in February and March. But throughout this season, which lasts over 20 weeks from the planting, which occurs in late September to early October, where we can have very high temperatures during the middle of the season, where we can have freezes and we protect typically with overhead irrigation for freeze protection, and then hot temperatures again during the late season, there can be quite a lot of variability in a given genotype for flavor over that time. So finding consistency for flavor in a particular cultivar candidate is very challenging, and that's where sensory is so important. A little background on our breeding process so you can visualize where the sensory sciences fit into the program. We make about 100 to 150 full sib crosses in any given year and grow out about 10,000 seedlings. Like most fruit breeding programs, we do multiple stages of clonal testing. In the stage two, for instance, with about 400 genotypes, we may have 20 to 50 plants, so we're able to evaluate on small plots for a limited number of traits. In stage three trials, we typically have 10 or 12 selections, and we're evaluating with much larger numbers of plants and replication. And then finally, at grower trial stage, we have seven different growers and quite a lot of fruit to use for different sensory panels. In stage one and stage two, before I talk about our trained panels, I'd like to say that here we employ a very highly untrained panel, which is myself. I don't claim to have the best palate in the world for strawberries. I'm sure it's probably pretty average, but I taste a lot of strawberries almost every day for many weeks, so I'll have you know that I'm untrained, but I'm very highly untrained. This is where Ann comes in. By the time we have stage three fruit, we have enough fruit to do trained sensory panels. So we do these are very important at this stage, as well as into the grower trial stage. So for trained sensory panels, Liz spoke a little bit about how this works earlier. We do these typically three times in a season, January, February, and March, to cover a lot of the temperature and environmental variability that we deal with. These fruit are stored 1 to 2 days, typically 2 days now, before we do the sensory panel, and I'll bring in why that's important. 10 panels who are trained on various reference standards for the descriptors. Here is an example of the reference standards that Anne uses. So for instance, for sweet, she would try to standardize the panelists on a sucrose solution. For bitter, she would use caffeine and various chemicals for green flavor, fermented and overripe, woody, musty, etc. So this is the same training she has done across years and time points during the season. Here's an example of some of the data. You've seen a couple of these type of biplots in earlier talks. I want to draw your attention to a couple of things. One, you'll notice selection 09127 on the right, which seems to correlate with the vectors for sweetness, strawberry flavor. And we find that sample liking, which is a question she asked at the very end of the panel, tends to always correlate pretty well with sweetness and flavor ratings. And I highlighted this selection 1024, which I was disappointed because I initially was somewhat excited about this selection, and disappointed me with this one. I was upset. It unfortunately correlated with astringent and sourness and woody and musty, so that was not good. It brought into question how highly untrained I actually was. And what was interesting, if you look at the next month in the same season, you'll see again 09127 correlating quite well, so we're starting to see some consistency, and again some consistency with 1024. Well, I was so upset by this, I went back and started doing my own tests, and what I discovered is that I did not detect the woody or musty aroma until it had been in cold storage for 2 days. Okay, so this is what I discovered. Was I had been eating this a lot in the field, but we had not done these tests. And this, for me, just illustrated the high importance of doing these kinds of panels before we invest too much time and energy in selections that are clearly not going to be of commercial quality. But for the 09127 selection, we kept noticing this consistency in how it was rating. And Jay Scott has told me multiple times, so it sticks in my head. In his opinion, a particular genotype does not have flavor, it has flavors that depend on the environment. And so one of the keys is trying to find something that's consistent. So this selection was actually released as Florida 127, which is now branded as Sensation Strawberry. And here's an example of this: just the sweetness ratings from the trained panels over 7 different harvest dates. And so you can see it's rating pretty consistently at the top. It's 6 out of 7 dates is statistically higher than Radiance, which is our industry leader, and on 4 out of 7 dates over Festival, and this continues for the other descriptors. So we're seeing some really encouraging consistency, and that ultimately led to the release. So one of the really important aspects of these panels is gathering really good data that helps us justify cultivar release, and make decisions about cultivar release. Stage 3 and grower trial stage is also where our consumer panels come in, and we want to make sure that our large consumer panels are consistent with the results that we're seeing in our trained panels. So again, this is with Charlie Sims and Lena Bartoshuk at the Food Science Department. Again, we make sure that we cold store at least overnight. In these, we are using usually over 100 untrained panelists. Linda uses a unique scale, a liking scale, which goes from negative 100 to 100, and an intensity scale, which goes from 0 to 100. So for instance, the panelists are pre-trained on this scale, where 0 would be no sensation at all, whereas 100 would be a sensation that's as intense, as strongly as could be imaginable. So each panelist is sort of rated on this scale and trained on this scale. Over a couple of years, we analyzed 43 genotypes across 25 harvest dates in over 4 years. So we so far have consumer sensory data over the last 4 years for about 114 samples. And so this is giving us a lot of great information. Here's an example. I just chose the most recent results at the end of last season. This actually showed a pretty good amount of variability on this scale. So Florida 127, which is branded as a Sensation, you can see at the top, followed by a Florida Selection and some other cultivars. One of the things we've consistently noticed, again, just like in the trained panels, that sweetness intensity correlates very well with over-liking. Overall liking seems to drive it very strongly, as does strawberry flavor intensity, but sweetness in some ways tends to be even more consistent. And here we're getting nice mean separations for these consumer panels, and again, we're seeing this selection followed at the top, and so we're encouraged by the consistency between the trained panels. So another way that we want to use the consumer and trained sensory data is to give us some information about what consumers like and why, and then what chemical constituents in the fruit may impact sweetness and flavor. So we take soluble solids data on subsets of each family to do quantitative genetic analyses from stage 1 and stage 2 fruit every year at multiple time points. In addition to that, we add titratable acidity using the same fruit batches that Ann uses for train panels, as well as the same fruit batches for consumer panels. We're quantifying sugars and acids individually, as well as the volatile compounds at all stages, both in targeted F1 breeding populations, as well as all the way up to grower trials. The idea being that we want to feed this information back through the sensory data that we gain from consumer panels in order to tell us something about what our breeding targets should be. So I pictured Mike here, who's in the audience, and hopefully will be available for questions afterwards. But we're very interested in volatile effects on sweetness, and an initial survey of 2 years of this data has been published, and we're currently analyzing another 2 years of data on the total of the 114 samples, so we're very excited about this work. Of course, we know that sweetness is a big driver of overall liking, and that total sugars is going to drive a lot of sweetness. But we are asking, what's the difference between these two genotypes, which seem to have the same total sugar levels but have very different sweetness ratings? And we're finding that a lot of this does indeed seem to be due to the volatile components. On Monday morning, a member of our team, Tomas Hasing, gave a talk, which hopefully can be accessed online after the conference, where he addressed statistical methods we're trying to explore to try to make the most of this data. I don't have time to go into it now, but I'd be happy to answer some more questions later. But in the meantime, there's a couple of targets that have been in the literature a long time in strawberry that we were very curious about, and this is Alan's work. The first compound was gamma-decalactone, which is very important in peach, we know, but it also is important in strawberry. What was interesting is that Michael was able to detect this in about half of the cultivars we tested in our consumer panels, implying that it was under some kind of simple genetic control, perhaps. We noticed that the compound tended to be high in our most highly flavored selections, including Florida 127, which is branded as Sensation. And indeed, Alan did some work in which he discovered this was indeed controlled by a single allele at a dominant locus, found a candidate gene for this production. And what Alan discovered, he used a RNA sequencing approach and was able to computationally bulk segregating progeny to identify this candidate, and it appears that there's essentially a large deletion in this region for the non-producing genotypes. So also Alan has been very interested in methylanthranolate, which has gotten a lot of press in the literature. It's virtually absent from commercial cultivars, but is highly present in the Frais de Bois, Fragaria vesca, in a cultivar called Mara de Bois, which has gotten a lot of press for its flavor recently. So that's something that we wanted to look at. Alan developed a very nice functional marker based on this candidate gene that in our segregating populations and even in wild material has segregated perfectly with the gamma-decalactone phenotype. So the top band amplifies from the candidate gene. And this season was the first season in which we actually used marker-assisted seedling selection. With this marker, we screened about 5,000 seedlings and tossed out about half of those that were predicted to be complete non-producers of the compound. Since we're interested in methylanthranolate, Ann partnered with us on a threshold detection. We were very curious to see how much was needed to be detected by panelists. So the puree that she just took, Radiant Strawberries, I believe it was, spiked part of it with methylanthranolate and fed it to 42 untrained panelists. It was an alternative forced choice test where they had two non-spiked and one spiked samples, and if they couldn't tell a difference, they were forced to choose which one they basically forced to guess. What was really interesting is that it was detectable at quite low levels, particularly the taste. To taste the compound. What was really interesting, though, is that a small proportion of panelists actually said they liked the compound. Some said it was too perfumey or too much like medicine or grape flavor. What's interesting is in the advanced selections that have high amounts of this, most people have liked it quite a lot. So we need to work out what could potentially be going on here and be very careful about maybe how different consumers are perceiving this. So we're feeding this information back into our breeding program. To conclude, flavor is a very complex problem. It requires a lot of collaboration, which we're pursuing, and we do appreciate those who the work we have mentioned here. Two main goals for the sensory panels: accurate evaluation of potential for new cultivars and generating knowledge about breeding targets. And in the future, we definitely hope to develop more markers for volatiles that appear to be important. I'll acknowledge the funding sources and other collaborators, and thank you for your attention.
We'll take one question. Anybody have a question for Vance?
Yeah. You mentioned one of your lines that you like, but then found later to be a bit woody. Is that necessarily a bad thing? Because I noticed on Principal Component 2 that it wasn't any worse than Pepsi-Cola's, as far as you like.
Well, the difference with this one, it was very consistent and strong, and if you go back to the actual ratings, the overall liking of this particular selection was very poor also.
Sometimes when you see the chemicals on their own,
right.
They seem like bad,
right.
Combination, they're quite useful.
Yeah, that could be true, yeah, but in this case it was seeming to affect the overall liking ratings as well. So
is every strawberry from now on going to be just super sweet?
No, every cultivar isn't going to be super sweet. I can't claim that by any means, but I hope we can make general progress over the years.
Can I make one comment on that? It's actually the overall profile. So sometimes you might want a little bit of the woody aromas, as long as they're balanced with maybe other ones. It's not like lemonade. If you look at it one by one, you don't get the one.
Yeah. Good observation.
Thank you, Vance. Thank you.